This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for February 4th, 2014. Welcome to the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. I'm Drew Messenger Michaels.
And I'm Lucio Valentino.
So today, we are going to talk about music. We have talked about video games quite a bit. That's actually, I guess, an understatement. Even just saying an understatement is probably an understatement, because we've had 7 episodes so far, and 7 of them have been about video games, right? And we are going to keep talking about games, because games are interesting. But we've both, I think, been really careful not to say that this is a podcast about video games, both because the world is well supplied with those and because we are interested in other things as well. So we're going to go into the world of music. Lucio and I are both pretty passionate about music. And really, it's not that different from games in that we're passionate about it, but we can feel very alienated from the mainstream cultural tropes attached to it or whatever, right? So let's dive right in. Yeah, Lucio, you want to get started?
Well, today's topic of discussion, it kind of comes from what happened recently at the Grammys. So we have a wide taste in music, I would say. We listen to all sorts of different genres, et cetera, et cetera. And today's discussion is kind of be something that happened recently in, I guess you could call it, the hip-hop community or rap community, whatever you want to label it as such. We had the, I don't know what number, Grammy Awards last week.
And I'd say the 197th annual Grammy Award.
Yes, there you go. 137th annual Grammy Fantastic Susie Award. Anyway, so there were a lot. I think there were 5 albums in total that were up in the running for Best Rap Album, including Macklemore's The Heist and Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City. And other ones included Yeezus by Kanye West, and I don't remember the Jay-Z album, and then one other. But the two that were getting a lot of attention were Macklemore's The Heist. It got a lot of attention over the last year, particularly because of Macklemore's independent roots, his sort of, he and Ryan Lewis, you know, basically making it on their own without a major record label and then getting an iTunes number one with Thrift Shop, et cetera, et cetera.
That's huge, right? And actually, really, so if the WordPress statistics are to be believed, we have a couple of listeners who are not from the United States. So let's just take one moment in case this is new information to anybody. Macklemore is an independent rapper out of Seattle, kind of a traditional MC in the sense that he, like, you know, it's his lyrics and he kind of masters the ceremonies, right? And Ryan Lewis, this producer, have kind of a traditional MC-DJ relationship if you know the history of hip-hop a little bit. But Macklemore and Ryan Lewis put out a record with no label, and they had, were all 3 singles number one hits at some point, or was Same Love never a number one hit?
I want to say it was, but I'm not 100% sure. It definitely got a lot of attention. It certainly was heard
by
a lot of
people.
It was a hit
for sure.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so they got 3 hit singles.
Not a number one, but.
Exactly. They got 3 hit singles. They did really, really well. They sold, I don't know, a bajillion records, a lot considering they had no label. And it came down to this Grammy battle between Macklemore's record, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's record, The Heist, and this guy Kendrick Lamar's record, Good Kid, Mad City. And Macklemore ended up winning 4 Grammys, right? He won Best Rap Album. Was it Best Rap Album or Best Hip Hop Album?
He won Best New Artist, Best Rap Album, Best Rap Song, and Best Rap Performance. And the one that's sort of in major dispute would be Best Rap Album, because there's a lot of division among the hip-hop community as far as whether or not Macklemore should have won. A lot of people feel like Kendrick Lamar should have won, and the fallout has been, for lack, I guess, of a more eloquent term, Macklemore hating. A lot of people are really, really upset that he won and feel like it was a real disservice to Kendrick Lamar and to hip-hop in general, which I really disagree with, but I mean, which we'll obviously get into. I don't know if we need any more prefacing here.
No, I think that's it. I just wanted to make sure, because, you know, if we start talking about Macklemore, so the big songs are Thrift Shop. What is Can't Hold Us?
Can't Hold Us, yeah.
Can't Hold Us is the second one, which you've heard in 1,000 commercials probably, even if you've not heard the song.
Because Thrift Shop, you've probably heard in at least 3 different movie advertisements from what
that's
I was hearing.
That's true. Totally. And that big horn lick is actually something that's going to come back as we talk about the substance of the Macklemore backlash. And the third one was Same Love, which was a pro-gay marriage song, which is not territory mainstream hip-hop has gone before, really. And it's that's not all the song is, right? It's about him wrestling with what sexuality is and what markers are supposed to indicate who's gay and who's not. And it's a pretty awesome song, right?
And it was co-written by a lesbian out of Seattle, too. She's a really, really good singer, Mary Lambert.
She is awesome, and it's gotten her all kinds of exposure. So the reaction of the queer community to Same Love, and specifically to Macklemore's stunt at the Grammys, is something we should get into.
And I think also we should take a little time, just, I mean, generally, to it'll come up in the course of the podcast, but just sort of deconstruct that idea of community, sort of like we talked about with, you know, video game culture or, you know, community, whatever, in a separate podcast that we had done, kind of what that means, because, you know, again, we'll get into it, but just off the bat, I'll say I played Same Love for my mother, who is, in fact, a lesbian, and she cried and felt like it was really important and is a huge fan of Macklemore, so.
Totally. So, awesome. I think that's a really good preface. This is feeling like a two-parter already, but we'll see. Let's start with the Kendrick Lamar stuff, all right? Because I think there's two communities at play here. I think we're the queer community, and to what degree you can even say there's a queer community when queer is an intentionally big word, is something we'll get into.
Yes.
But first, let's talk about the hip-hop community. So, to me as an outsider, to somebody who listens, like, I enjoy hip-hop, but I'm not switched into that community in any meaningful way. To me, Kendrick Lamar seems like a technical genius, right? Like, he's just, his flow is impeccable. I think you put it really well. He sounds like another instrument. You know, he's just spot on every time.
Yes.
He's kind of like, and he performed at the Grammys as well, and he did kind of a thing with this band Imagine Dragons that I've never been that into, but it was just technical perfection. It was a really good example of how mainstream pop or hip hop or rap can just be awesome.
I would draw a parallel between Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z, not necessarily, you know, in the terms of their scope or accomplishment, but definitely in terms of what has made Jay-Z so popular, for, in my opinion and otherwise, like, he's a very, very good rapper. But his strength to me has always been, one, he finds people who can give him really great beats, and then two, his ability to rhythmically keep up with those beats with his flow is really impeccable. And that's sort of what Kendrick Lamar, that's what I mean by an extra instrument. It's something that Nas, as amazing a lyricist as he is, or even Tech N9ne, another lyricist who has this very, like, fast, rapid fire style, they rap very well to the beat, but at the same time, it doesn't sort of transcend that, you know, other instrument in the room. Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar sort of understand inherently that their voice is a part of what you're listening to, and that it comes out in such a way. It's kind of what, you know, like earlier, before I really started getting back into hip hop and hitting it really hardcore, like when I was younger, Kendrick Lamar, I think I had mentioned it to you or maybe even to my wife, wasn't someone I would have necessarily listened to. And for that matter, even Lil Wayne, he's kind of another example of someone who I feel like lyrically and has gotten kind of worse over the years. But stylistically, it's hard to deny that he's been able to find this really great ability to, like, as I say, keep up with the music. So
yeah, and so one thing I've heard people kind of decry Macklemore for is that he's prone to not doing that, right?
Yes, he's a more straightforward traditional rapper. Yeah,
Macklemore is a little bit more prone to falling behind the beat for the purpose of articulation. He just gets so into it, and he's like telling a story that he kind of backphrases or tumbles over, and it's really awesome to watch, but it's easy to understand how somebody who's way, way into rap could think like, oh, he's rapping wrong.
Yeah, again, not necessarily wrong, but maybe not as impressively. It's very good. I mean, he, you know, I will say, I should admit that I'm a Macklemore fanboy, and that does definitely skew my bias a little bit, but...
And you liked it before, you liked him before, yes, it was cool. And that's, yeah, important.
That is true. That is my one hipster cred. No, but I will say that having, you know, he came out with his first album, which was also independently produced in 2005, I believe, The Language of My World. And that was when I first heard it through a friend. And he was very good then. I would say actually that he might have even been not better, but maybe more lyrically grounded. You know, the current album, a lot of what gets him flack is that, oh, it's, you know, hip hop and pop coming together, and that just doesn't work. But he's definitely found his voice. And I've definitely can hear where he's improved. Maybe not necessarily as a lyrical artist. It's hard to discuss these things because they're so subjective.
This is why we held off talking about music for a while, right? Because the language yes, around it, like yes. I think we've built up a vocabulary around games that we're comfortable with. I think you and I think the world has a pretty comfortable vocabulary around film or literature. Music is really hard because it's really hard not to sound like a poncy rock critic when you talk about this shit.
Yes.
It's possible. It's just challenging. So yeah, so if we're tripping over our words, that's why, and I guess we should attempt not to be self-conscious about it and forge ahead or whatever. But yeah, so to me, the difference, because you showed me Language of My World back when you were first into it, and I agree that it's probably the better record overall in terms of like what's amazing about Macklemore. The Heist, it seems to me, is an experiment in whether somebody like Macklemore can achieve mainstream success, can sort of storm the gates. Yes. And he's self-critical of that mission. There's that great song where he, you know, breaks into a building and, you know, all that stuff.
But, yeah, Jimmy Iovine, which in my opinion, I mean, if people, that's the thing I feel, I don't have any, you know, concrete evidence, but I feel like a lot of the people who are not very impressed by Macklemore haven't really given the whole album a chance. He has definitely mm-hmm. gotten his radio songs, and I think more people are exposed to that. But I mean, if you want to hear just a really, really good, you know, technical rap, you should listen to, I forget how to pronounce his name. I think Jimmy Iovine is the name of the track, which is about the Interscope CEO. And it's really, really good. And it's one of the strongest songs on the album. But obviously didn't get played on the radio for, I don't know, political reasons or, you know, whatever. I mean, he calls out the guy by name. It's not cute, which a lot of rappers will normally do, kind of keep a little more subtle, but he does not do that. So,
well, I think he blogged about it recently. They after because Can't Hold Us, I guess, was a big hit, but didn't live on the charts quite as long as Thrift Shop had. Mm-hmm. So they wanted a third single from him, and he chose to go with Same Love for political reasons, which again we'll get back to because he thought it was important to get that out there. And I guess they never asked him for a fourth single, so oh. Who knows? So we'll see what happens. And who's they, right? They is a complicated yeah. mass of radio conglomerates and things like that. But the very fact that he was negotiating with them rather than the label doing so is kind of revolutionary.
Yeah, definitely.
If not revolutionary, certainly evolutionary, right? It's a new way to do business and a new way to have a hit record.
Yes, and I think that's unfortunate that in the wake of all this, that part aspect of it is being undershadowed, you know, because it's a really great way to do things, and especially if, you know, Macklemore's proven you can make a living doing it, I would think that people would be looking to him for that. Not as though he's the only person or the first person to be able to do it, but it's definitely a really, really good step, as you say, in a really good direction. I think about, you know, walking through Oakland or down College Avenue or Telegraph, you know, and there's all these guys handing out their demos, and that's all they have is their hustle. You know, they're trying to get people to just listen to them. They're not, I mean, the good ones are anyway. Sometimes they want to charge you, but the good ones are just giving away their music and trying to get heard so that they can make it. And I mean, you know, if getting a major record label is sort of the end game, I just feel like that's not as capable a way to do it as Macklemore and Ryan Lewis have done. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, it's and by the way, that's not to say, tempting though it may be, that's not to say set the labels on fire, we don't need them, right?
Yeah,
like the
exactly.
labels serve a purpose, yeah. You know, as far as letting artists mature and issuing advances so people can make records. There's a place for the labels, but you know, like this is where capitalism really works. If you don't need a label, then labels will have to add value in ways that are valuable, right?
Exactly. So, or they might have to change their methods, which, you know, has a lot of what we don't agree with as consumers, like DRM, for example.
Just, you know, as one example.
It's just one, you know.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, one also intellectual property practices, right? Just going after people because of trademarks and the kinds of things big companies do. If there's an alternative that's kind of kinder and gentler, that's two guys making a record and putting it out there and winning 4 Grammys.
And frankly, probably more fun.
Sure, totally. Absolutely, completely. Okay, so this leads to something interesting, which is the whole who's storming the gates on whose turf kind of topic, right? A minute ago, yeah. I said we're kind of dealing with like the indie versus mainstream thing, and in my head, Kendrick Lamar is kind of on the side of what I would consider a really good example of establishment hip-hop. There's nothing really stylistically new about what he's doing. He's just doing it really well. I get the impression, though, that people think exactly the opposite, that there's something about Macklemore that's an establishment figure or a produced or canned or artificial personality, and that Kendrick Lamar is storming the gates. Now, I don't know Kendrick Lamar's whole background. Tell me why I'm full of shit.
You are not full of shit. Again, this is all very subjective, and it's more complicated because if you look at Kendrick Lamar, he did go the classic route. He's like all artists, he signed to his own label, but it's a subsidiary of, you know, this and that. And I believe he's actually under Interscope, which was, you know, the irony is not lost on me that Macklemore has a Jimmy Iovine song. But yeah, so his label is Top Dog Entertainment, which is a subsidiary of Aftermath, Dr. Dre's label, because Dr. Dre executive produced the album Good Kid, Mad City, which is a subsidiary of Interscope. And, you know, most major rap artists I can think of are under the Interscope label as far as West Coast, like, or, you know, like that West Coast sound, which is what you would might call it. Dr. Dre has been under Interscope for years. Eminem's Shady Aftermath label is under Interscope. I want to say that 50 Cent is under Interscope. And then there are, you know, varying different ones. But anyway, what's important about Kendrick Lamar, I'm going to start with this. This was sort of my tagline. I wanted to write a written article. I'm kind of enjoying this more, and since I can't access my account anyway, this is what I wanted to start with. This was sort of my tag. Macklemore and Ryan Lewis absolutely deserved to win the Grammy for Best Rap Album. If, you know, the Grammys are important to you and that sort of thing matters, they absolutely deserve to win. Kendrick Lamar should have won. And what I mean by that is that both albums to me were really comparable. And, you know, it's hard to pick one over the other. But when I say Kendrick Lamar should have won, this was sort of my I forget what you call it, like my bullet points, my list of why. Anyway, Macklemore's album was really, really good. It covers a lot of different topics, especially in terms of like personal introspection and how that affects, you know, the world around him and people around him. And as a whole, it just works really, really well. Kendrick Lamar, I feel like, should have won because his album does the same thing, but in a very different way. If you look at Good Kid, Mad City, it is very much a concept album. Almost like the sort of like a rap equivalent of a rock opera. It follows, you know, this, I think like a period of one, maybe even like a day and a half of Kendrick Lamar. And it's interspersed with like conversations or voicemails from like his parents and with his friends. And it really, really gives you a really, really amazing insight into the mind of a boy growing up in Compton. It's very specific. It's very like narrowed, focused in that way. But it should have won because I think we really need to hear that. As much as I love Macklemore, and we need to hear his messages too, I feel like the thing with Kendrick Lamar is that there's a lot of people who dismiss hip hop because it is very abrasive and kind of hard to approach, and sort of like and just diving in. So for example, like a 50-year-old, you know, white man who grew up and maybe was, you know, more conservative or whatever, might never hear Kendrick Lamar's story, and so is missing out on this, you know, entire part of his culture. You know, and he might be the kind of person who's touting like, you know, America as this great, you know, melting pot or, you know, whatever. Like I'm just being totally, you know, hypothetical here and throwing stuff out, but this is kind of just,
you can say reverse racist. Yeah. You're being reverse racist.
not racist. It's just, this is the scenario I'm thinking in my head, is like people need to hear Kendrick Lamar's story. It's really important. And, what I really love about the album is I've listened to it several times. I made my wife listen to it because, she's sort of in a similar boat. She loved Macklemore and didn't, you know, when she thinks of Kendrick Lamar, just on what little she searched, she's like, I just don't want to hear it. You know, I just feel like it's too appropriate. My wife is a very, like, the sweetest woman you'll ever meet, and she's white. And so, you know, that sort of thing kind of, it's just her picturing it sort of, it's like, I don't want to hear all the negativity and stuff. I made her sit down and listen to it. And by the end of it, she said, I really, really liked that. That was really amazing. It gave me, you know, like she's a kindergarten teacher, and she thinks about problem students that she has to deal with on a daily basis occasionally. And she said, wow, that, you know, it just makes me think I shouldn't even complain. You know, there are so many other, there's this whole other group that, you know, has this whole other situation they have to deal with. And I mean, I'm speaking in vague terms, but, you know, that includes, you know, racism, classism, if you want to call it that, you know, social,
kids who grow up poor and don't have any serious economic opportunities, yeah, exactly, outside of extra legal ones like the drug game.
And the album does an amazing job of kind of joining those two things. There is a little bit of the glorification of hip hop, which in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's just sometimes it says things that, you know, I don't personally agree with, and I know a lot of people I know don't agree with. But hip hop is hip hop in the same way. And but it does a really good job of spanning that whole thing. Like from the start, it's very much kind of, you know, you're touching on the important themes. And then by the time you get to the middle and the end with songs like, you know, Good Kid, Mad City and Will You Sing About Me, Dying of Thirst, you know, like you realize, wow, this kid is saying a lot. And I'm being facetious when I say kid, he's my age. But
well, it's his word, not your word. Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess I'm saying all that just to kind of put into perspective for our listeners who maybe are not familiar with both, the value of both, because we did talk a lot about Macklemore at the beginning. And I think, you know, Kendrick is equally as important right now for hip hop, especially with this album, because it does bridge that gap between, you know, for listeners, like, you know, someone who like my, and the, well, the thing I love about it too, and this is, we can kind of segue into this, is Kendrick Lamar is exactly the kind of rap artist that Macklemore loves. I mean, like, no joke. If you like, and that's not me speculating. That's if you listen to Macklemore's first album, Language of My World, he has a song. His the first song on that album is called White Privilege, and he's discussing how, you know, the white people in mainstream, you know, music has appropriated hip hop and kind of turned it into whatever they want it to be. I can think of some lyrics specifically offhead, but it'll mean nothing. I'd rather people listen to the song. Seriously, listen to it. It's called White Privilege by Macklemore. And at the same time, another song that probably didn't get much radio play, I don't know if people have heard off of The Heist, is called Awake. And the whole second verse is him talking about how, yes, what I'm doing, I enjoy, I love it. But people who were saying like, oh, I love Macklemore because he's like positive hip hop, he literally in that song says, stop it. Like, he has a whole line about, oh, his music, it's so well-spoken, it's poetry, stop it. You know, he's really talking about how there are other artists, especially black artists, who have been doing this for a long time. And if you care to listen, kind of like with Good Kid, Mad City, which I think is a really great dive-in example, if you care to make it through and listen, yes, there's a lot of, you know, oh, I got, you know, damn, I got bitches, wifey, girlfriend, and mistress. You know, yes, Kendrick, you know, you're excited, you're doing your thing. But, you know, you have to take that with, you know, should I hate all this shit, or should I hate the fact that all that shit doesn't make me real? Like, you know, Kendrick is very much all-encompassing. So, again, I'm not quite sure what my point was, but I definitely wanted to bring, you know, Kendrick into the conversation.
Your point was we gave anybody who's not familiar with Macklemore a primer in who Macklemore is and why he's important, so you felt it was only fair to do the same for Kendrick Lamar, and I think that makes total sense, because the thing is, what we're kind of orbiting around here, is that there can be two, I dare say there can even be more than two, really,
really?
Fucking
you
amazing
dare
rap albums in the same year. I dare. And this is, but this is not the logic of the Grammys award shows. The logic is there has to be a winner. You know, it's like a winner. We're a winner-focused culture, right? Maybe that's a product of capitalism or whatever, but somebody has to be the victor, and that means somebody has to be the vanquished. And that's,
yes,
for lack of a better term, fucking stupid. But more than that, there's an aspect of, like, dividing and conquering on the part of entrenched powers. Like, they get to say, yes, you two guys who are saying something interesting in this genre that we don't have that much respect for, battle it out, fight to the death, and one of you can walk away, but the other can't. You know, there's this aspect of, like, pitting people against each other, when, as you say, there's no conflict. Macklemore has said on several occasions that Good Kid, Mad City is his favorite record of the year, and, like, as far as I know, they're friends, the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no conflict, but you wouldn't know that from the reactions of the fans.
Yes, and I think that's the hardest thing, because we, you know, it's if there's a proof anywhere of it, it's on the internet, that when we get very passionate about something, we get angry. And I think a lot of this fallout has to do with kind of what my whole issue is. Again, you know, there's one side that loves Macklemore, and I would speculate, and I don't want to say concretely, probably didn't listen to Good Kid, Mad City in its entirety. Conversely, I would say the same thing. There's probably a lot of, you know, hip-hop fans, rap fans who listen to Good Kid, Mad City. I'm going to put myself on a limb here and just say a lot of them are probably colored, who did not listen to The Heist in its entirety and so missed out on a lot of both, you know, and they're judging both on radio play, which in my opinion is sort of useless anyway, because if you look at the singles that got released, they're not even the most important songs on the respective albums.
I was going to say, I'm sure there are people of all racial groups who have just heard the singles from both records and are just judging it on that. You know what I mean? Like, haven't heard either record the whole way through. And that goes beyond color lines or anything. That's just about our culture of singles and, you know, and the death of the album, which is a much bigger topic, right? Yeah. I mean, and like anything affixed with the death of, it's not really dying and it never was, but it's but there's less of it in people's consciousness, right? The yeah. idea of sitting down and listening to a record. So right, if you're judging it on Thrift Shop versus what was the first single off
Good Kid, M.A.A.D. City? I was just about to say so consider that The Recipe was the first single released by Kendrick Lamar, but it's not even on Good Kid, M.A.A.D. City proper. It's actually, you can only get that song if you buy a deluxe version with the extra songs. Swimming Pools is a really good song about, you know, alcohol. But it's one of those songs kind of like Hey Ya. You know, I can picture someone listening to that song in their car and like, yeah, vibing, you know, toe up, drank. Get up, drink, you know, and they're missing the message because it almost sounds like it's glorifying alcohol.
They're missing all of the don't try to fight the feeling because the thought alone is killing me right
yeah,
now.
So someone, you know, who doesn't like Kendrick is listening to that song, they're like, oh, this guy's just talking about alcohol, you know. Then there's Backseat Freestyle, which is easily his most superficial song, but it's fun just because he's freestyling, so I can understand why they picked that as a single. Poetic Justice.
Jump back real quick, yeah. I said there were no other singles off of The Heist, but there's a video for Wings, the song about Nikes.
Yes, there's a video.
So I'm not sure, I don't know if that ever got radio play, but I did notice, I checked out the video, it's a pretty good video, and there are all these comments below it on YouTube being YouTube, that say like, well, why'd you do a free commercial for Nike, Macklemore?
Oh my god.
Which... the song is pretty much about Nike being predatory in low-income communities and status symbols, consumers, anyway.
Sorry, just because I'm on a roll, I want to finish this.
Totally. I just wanted to get that in there.
No, it's all good. So Poetic Justice, which has Drake talking about that one was kind of, to me, the most kind of the weakest song on the album. But it's just very straightforward song about, you know, relationships, being with a girl, whatever. And then Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe, which is the first song on the album and starts off kind of like I said, you know, touching upon these really important themes, but not necessarily, they don't come to full fruition until the end. Anyway, those are the five singles that were released off of the album. And so none of those are, you know, give you the same sort of emotional response that you would get from, like, you know, Real, Sing About Me, Dying of Thirst, you know, Good Kid, M.A.A.D. City, Art of Peer Pressure. Similarly with, you know, Macklemore. So it looks like, yeah, Wings was the first single off of The Heist, which is, you know, good that, you know, that's there. But then the next four singles, you know, Can't Hold Us, Same Love, Thrift Shop, White Walls. Can't Hold Us is just about loving life, celebrating. Same Love is really important about gay marriage. But, you know, then Thrift Shop is just about thrift shopping. White Walls is about Cadillacs. So, again, you're not getting, you know, the full scope with songs like Awake, the one I just mentioned, which is, you know.
Right. Where he literally says, you know, it's not my issue and I can't solve it if, what is it, cynical white hipsters with long hair and cocaine problems.
Yeah,
like his music.
Exactly.
Is that, he says
yeah.
something like that.
Awake, Starting Over, which, oh man, I played that one for my mom and she cried too, which is really, really good about, you know, overcoming addiction.
That one's interesting because if you haven't heard the EP or you don't know about Macklemore's history with cough syrup addiction, I don't know how much sense that makes. But
yeah, but I love it.
I mean, he gives you background. I'm not saying people would be lost. Yeah, I'm assuming anyone who's invested enough in the narrative to get that deep, you know, it can wiki it if they need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, The Art of Peer Pressure is a great example of a song that changes the whole meaning of the album, that, you know, you wouldn't get that picture if you just
exactly,
were basing your
exactly,
opinion on
because
the singles.
if you miss that song, then, you know, him talking about his behavior just sounds like more of the same. But if you hear that song, and that was actually another thing I had talked to Kimberly about, maybe the division between the two albums. And I mean, I guess I should say right away, I don't look at the Grammys as, you know, important. It doesn't matter to me. Obviously, it matters to people, but...
it matters to record sales, and it matters to
yeah.
people's abilities to get more stuff out there. Same as the Oscars, right? That's the deal.
Yeah, and the perspective that's important to keep is that you got to look... I think what the Grammys are supposed to be looking at is, one, just the, you know, faceless people who voted on it, but theoretically, they're looking at maybe which album... I don't know, represented the, it's really murky.
The zeitgeist or whatever.
Yeah,
well, so Macklemore kind of spoke to this. He was interviewed after the Grammys. I say was interviewed in the passive voice because I can't remember who interviewed him. But he said that he felt he and Ryan Lewis had an unfair advantage due to being white because, and also because one of their singles was kind of funny, specifically because a lot of Grammy voters are older white guys who aren't that switched on to hip hop. So if they see something that feels a little bit more like them, they may be more inclined to vote for that. And that's probably true. You know, and again, I want to be very clear that there's nothing Well, okay, this is the last kind of topic. We'll get back to the question in a second of whether there's any credence to the idea that white people just aren't allowed to rap, which is one of the kind of undercurrents of the backlash against Macklemore. But before we get to that, I do want to make it clear that Macklemore is not, there's no minstrelsy to what he does. There's no, he's not pretending to be anybody. He's not aping a culture that's not his own.
Since 05, he's been very clear about the fact that he does not do that. Yeah.
The song that is White Privilege that leads off Language of My World. And then on the Verses EP, he has a rap about being Irish, for Christ's sake. Like there's no fronting there, right? So this is kind of the final frontier, though, right? There is this partially very understandable frustration with a white guy or two white guys taking a Grammy in one of the very few categories that people of color can usually get a Grammy in, you know?
I understand that frustration, yeah.
But what exactly is he supposed to do about that? You know what I mean? Unless you really are making the argument that white people have no business rapping ever, which would be an interesting argument to make. I don't know what the plan is. You know what I mean? Like, should he just not do what he's doing? I don't know. I don't know what the end game of that would be.
I think it would be an artistically devastating end game, because it sort of goes to the whole argument of, if no one, for example, could rap, like if you start putting limitations on it, then you're losing a core part of what hip hop and rap was, because, you know, hip hop and rap started as spoken word, and it was really the kind of thing that was done without any of this, you know, of these furls as far as like having a major record label. I mean, it started off in New York and with really like MC is the right term, because it really started off with guys who were just there to play the music, and then they would start, you know, doing the proto version of freestyling over whatever they had in its limited form, whether it was, you know, cool or not.
And it was whatever they had, because they couldn't necessarily afford instruments.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It was ready at hand.
It's very much, I mean, that's one of the reasons that, you know, Macklemore should be, or at least maybe not him specifically, but that, you know, that this win should signify a good step, as we've said, in terms of independent production, because that's really what hip hop is. I mean, if you look at the history of black music, that's what a lot of it is. And if you look at, you know, the origin of the blues, it was a guy sitting on his porch talking about how shitty he felt with a guitar. If you look at jazz before it became this sort of, I mean, I like that it's high culture, because that means jazz will stay alive in a culture that largely doesn't value it anymore. But originally jazz was really just like, you go down the street and that night Miles Davis and Charlie Parker just happened to be like messing around, you know, and you're just paying to get a drink. You're not even paying to see them, you know?
Totally.
It was just guys who came together and wanted to create. And that's, I think hip hop is definitely an extension of that. So when you start saying, you know, so-and-so can't do it, you know, I guess I understand that sort of like that racial defensiveness or whatever, but I mean, at the same time, it's bullshit, you know?
Yeah. Cultural appropriation is real, but cultural appropriation is not a white guy performing a form of music that black people made up. That's just called American music. Cultural appropriation would be if Macklemore, you know, claimed experiences that were not his own, you know, like if he started covering Kendrick Lamar songs or whatever, right? There would be an element of disingenuousness to that.
That made me cringe just picturing it.
It would be kind of awesome if he did that and Kendrick Lamar did one of his, like, back to back, but, you know, as kind of a meta art project. But a guy rapping about his own experiences is something everybody should be allowed to do. You know, that's the whole point. Because as you said, Macklemore goes to great lengths as perhaps he should, to honor where rap came from and the legacy and the people who came before him and the people who get thought of as thugs, which, man, that word, that code word could be a whole podcast for sure. What they're doing isn't less real than what he's doing, or less valuable or less artistic or anything
which,
like that.
Which again to me is a huge step forward, because, you know, as far as I know, Elvis Presley never really did that.
True.
To the same degree.
That's true. Elvis was much more of an appropriator.
I don't know much about Eric Clapton. And I don't want to say that he was as bad as Elvis, but I would imagine maybe he sort of shied
Clapton,
away from that subject.
I would say Clapton was a lot better, because didn't he produce some records by old blues guys and stuff? Like
I don't know much about him. I just I don't know that I've ever heard about him being vocal. I mean, Macklemore, I think, understands that it's an issue and acknowledges it from the get-go. I like Eminem a lot. It was interesting that he never really acknowledged it until his third album, which, you know, I don't feel like he needed to anyway. But I've definitely always respected the fact that it was something that Macklemore did right out of the gate, you know, because I think he also didn't want it to distract from what he was doing, because it is very much his music. In the case of The Heist, it's him and Ryan Lewis, you know, creating this thing together. And I think sort of what's happening now is kind of exactly what he was hoping would not happen. And, you know, that part is unfortunate because, you know, I'm not trying to do the whole reverse racism thing or anything, but it's just, you know, speaking about Kendrick and Macklemore as humans, you know, Kendrick Lamar gets to go home and not worry about if he's hip hop or not. He is, you know, he doesn't have to defend himself. Macklemore has to go home and think like, oh, well, I'm making my music, but people don't like it because it doesn't fit this, you know, specific, you know, I'm like, am I a poser? Like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I think is unfortunate that, you know, that he even has to deal with that. So,
right. Totally. I mean, reverse racism is bullshit. Let's be clear on that point, you know, yes. Unequivocally, there's no such thing. It's not real. There's a really good stand-up routine on the topic that I will link to, but it is valid that, you know, and well, okay. So we're probably wrapping up here. Right. But when we talk about the queer stuff and how that relates to the Macklemore backlash, this is going to come up again, which is when you reject somebody for not being part of your community, even when he's being productive and positive, I don't know that that's ever a good idea. You know what I mean? Which is to say, Macklemore couldn't have conceivably been more straightforward about like, hey, everybody, I'm a white rapper, but I'm not Vanilla Ice. How you doing? Like, he couldn't have done that any more clearly. So to throw away whatever it is he's saying or dismiss it out of hand simply because he's white, I'm not going to say it's reverse racism because that would be stupid, but it's unwise and it's a conversation ender when the conversation is just getting started in a useful way.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Well, cool. All right. So I think this is a place to stop. Let's pick this up next time with the other side of this coin. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. If you want to subscribe, if you want to listen a lot more, you can use RSS if you're old school. You can also use iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbay. Also, I think we have a new form of communication coming out soon. It involves microwaves, actual microwaves, not the wave that your cell phone uses, but if you actually enter a secret code into your microwave with a baked potato inside, the potato, when split open, will have tiny versions of me and Lucio, who will then talk to you about pop culture.
It's in its inceptional phase, so you need to have russet potatoes. We haven't moved on to any other kind yet. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, work in progress. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Happy musicking.